Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Rob from Lakeside.
All right, I got my own fan club. My name's Rod Bailey. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Celeste, you did a great job. Yeah. And, you know, to see the tears in the heart, you know, that's coming from the heart. My sponsor, you know, a long time ago told me that. You know, and I'll get more into that, you know, what it was like, what it is, and what it's like now. You know, a picture's worth a thousand words. Let me show you. All right. Here's the before look.
You can recognize that.
You cleaned up pretty good.
I know I did. I'm a grateful alcoholic, and it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you, Randy, for asking me to speak here. You know, I'm here with a whole lot of friends, you know, on a special night. You know, we got a full moon out there. We can go howling, and we can do it sober. I was born in Galveston, Texas. Yeah, I'd like to say my dad's the one that started me drinking, because they used to take me rides on the beach in Galveston, and the only way they could get me to shut up is put a little bit of whiskey on my gums, you know, and run it back around there. And they said that just shut me up right away. Yeah, my drinking started a long time ago. And the earliest I can remember is, you know, just walking. It'd be some beer or stuff left around. Because, see, my mom and dad are normies. Yeah. They'd have the beer there, and they have a little bit of Mogan David wine. I don't know if anybody remembers Mogan David wine. You know? And, you know, I'd go around, you know, and take those glasses into the kitchen, and I would empty the glasses. And, you know, it made me feel good. Yeah. Made me 6 foot tall and bulletproof. Yeah. I wasn't ashamed to do anything. Yeah. And that continued through my life. Yeah, I was an overachiever. I always wanted my dad's praise and my mom's praise. Yeah, and my dad was racing some cars and racing some motorcycles. So very early age, I got into that. And I did very well. And my dad gave me a work ethic of working hard. He says, if you work hard, you're going to amount to something. And I did that. And I was able to do that very well. Yeah. My drinking just compressed. Again, I just went all the way through high school, junior high. I was kicked out of elementary school because we had a little bottle of whiskey, me and a friend of mine, you know. And we were taking a few sips off of that. And after a while, I don't remember what I said or I did, but they got a hold of the bottle and asked my mom to come up and pick me up. My dad had to work out of town because he was working construction. So, you know, when he got home, I knew, you know, bad time for Rod, yeah. And, you know, it just progressed from there. Yeah. I was always shy. I wanted the praise. I wanted, you know, for you to see what I did and for you to praise without having to ask for it. Because, see, I was ashamed of that, yeah. Because I always figured, you know, I just didn't fit in. I don't know about you guys, yeah. You know, in school, I was the meanest kid in there. So I'd get kicked out of classes and get kicked out of this and get kicked out of that. I was the guy that rode the bike to the school and up and down the hallways, raising hell. Yeah. They was always kicking me out. I remember one time my mom got a call from the school. They said, we need for you to come up and pick up your son. And she said, what did Rod do this time? He said, oh, no, it's not Rod, it's Mike. Now, my younger brother Mike never got in trouble. This was the first time. But this just goes to show you, you know, where it started. My alcoholism started a long time before I picked up a drink, you know, and started drinking on a progressive basis. You know? And it continued all the way through my life. You know? It gave me the courage to walk up to that girl and say, do you want to dance? You know? Gave me the courage, you know, to do a little bit of anything. You know? And that's the way my life was. You know? I got into racing very early, so you know, I wanted to be somebody. And I excelled in that. I did very, very well in that. And you know, my mom and dad, when I graduated, well, I didn't graduate from high school. I started to tell a lie. I've got to be honest about this, you know. I think it was the junior year, you know, I got a girl pregnant. Yeah, so I was going to do the right thing. Because, see, I was raised in a Southern Baptist family, and that's what you did, yeah. Well, she had a miscarriage, yeah, and I didn't have to marry her. But they told me I had to get a job. My uncle down here was an electrical contractor, so I came down here. And I kept my drinking going, you know. And, you know, I made a deal with the union that I could race, I had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to go racing, yeah. Then I had to go back to school and do those school at night, yeah. And I got that done. Because, see, I'm a cheater. I'm a hell of a liar and a hell of a manipulator, yeah. And, you know, I got that done with other people doing my work for me. I could do the physical work. It was the mental work I just couldn't handle, you know. And, you know, I'd take that drink and tell them anything I could to get them to do. I had girlfriends doing my homework, turning in everything for me, yeah. And it happened the same way when I got married, yeah. They did the same thing for me, yeah. I got in the electrical union and excelled very well. In my third year, they made me a foreman. In my fourth year, they made me a general foreman. And, you know, I went out on my own. And I started making money, a lot of money real quick. I made a lot of money racing, too. And, you know, no matter where I went, the bottle went along with me. Now, in construction, you get a lot of work done, you know. If you buy a case of beer for whoever's got the tractor out there digging you some holes, you know. You look great, Dave. And, you know, I was able to do that. I'd buy a case of beer, you know. At Christmas time, I'd handle out bottles. I'd go down to the liquor barn. I don't know if anybody remembers the liquor barn down there on Spring Street.
Yeah.
Well, instead of taking a pickup, I'd take a flatbed. And I'm telling myself, well, this is what I'm giving away for Christmas. Now, some of it went to for Christmas presents, but a lot of it went to my house. Yeah. Because, see, I don't know about you guys. Before I went to a bar, I had to have a few drinks. Yeah. And that worked out for me for a long time. I was very successful in business. I made a lot of money. Yeah. I had the house on the hill, the cars. Yeah. A lot of people looked up to me. Yeah. But I was still that falling down drunk that nobody ever got to see. Because, see, when I came home, there was a bottle in there. And I'd have to go out in my game room, have a few drinks. And after that game room, you know, I'd have to sit in that jacuzzi for a little while, yeah. Or on the way home, I'd have to hit, you know, maybe one bar just to take the buzz off, you know, just to get a little of the tension away. And I'd swing into a bar. Yeah. I'd usually start out at Chris's, you know, over there in Kearney Mesa. And from Kearney Mesa, I'd get down probably 805 and get underneath the bridge there, you know. This is an average day for me, so I'd have to pull off and have another drink because I had to use the restroom. And, you know, for me, I never had one drink. It was always set up a double and keep them coming for a little while. Yeah. And I'd leave that glass house, yeah, and I'd get up someplace around 70th Street or so, place like that, and I'd have to pull off, you know, just head for another bar. Yeah. And there was a little bar down there on University, you know, that little club that was nice and dark, and I'd walk in there, you know, have a few drinks. Now, all the deals was that I told my wife, I said, hey, don't worry. I'll be home for dinner. She'd make that nice dinner. The kids would be waiting up there for me, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I'd end up leaving that bar someplace around 9:30, 10 o'clock, make it to El Cajon. Yeah. And El Cajon, if you take off on El Cajon Boulevard, there's a bar over there. It used to be Gusser's. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I swung in there and had to have a few drinks. And a few drinks would lead to a little bit more. You know, there's drugs in my story, too, because, you know, I was able to find drugs very readily. You know, I was able to leave there someplace about 12 o'clock. I don't know about you guys, 12 o'clock's a good time to get home. Yeah. But there'd be a place over in Lakeside. I'd pull off, you know, and pull into this place. It's called a cuckoo nest. I don't know if anybody knows that, you know. It's a real nice bar. And I'd have to pull off there and get a few drinks, you know, just to make it home. Then, you know, sooner or later I'd make it to Eucalyptus Hills and pull that truck in, you know, and park and get out of it. And I'd look at my watch and it would say, damn, it's about 2:30. And I had all the intentions to go home for that dinner. Yeah. Kids had already in bed. I walked in the door and I knew that she was going to be pissed no matter what. Yeah. If she was in bed, I fixed me a drink, then I headed off to bed. The alarm would go off someplace around 4 o'clock, you know. And I'd have a 44-ounce glass of Yukon Jack sitting on the nightstand. I don't know about you guys. If I wake up, I need something to get back to sleep, you know. Just to take the edge off, yeah. And that lady would start to wonder and ask questions, you know, where you been? What have you been doing? You know? Pretty soon she got fed up with my crap, yeah, and left. And see, I'm a hell of an alcoholic. Because I told you I had some money. If you didn't like what I was doing, I gave you the money and told you to hit the door. Yeah? And I didn't look back. And that happened several times, you know. And I'd get married again, have these girlfriends and stuff, and it would happen again, get another divorce. I don't know about you guys. Al's laughing. He knows how many times I was married. Yeah. Only been married 10 times. Yeah. And yeah, those ladies were great ladies. See, I'm an alcoholic. No matter what, I get drunk. And those kids were raised on the back of a race trailer or motor home or something like that going so that dad could build his ego. Yeah. So that dad could have the stuff. Yeah. And that worked for a long time. I got sober February the 1st, 1993. That's when I started SP 38. And September the 9th, yeah, I was going to a car show, and we just wound up a job, you know, that was over in Coronado, and my guys had made me a whole lot of money, and I'm going, damn, got it made. Yeah, I'm going to take them all over to Chewy's. And they had the tequila girls over there at that time. I don't know about you guys, I was just going to take them out for dinner and have a few drinks. Yeah, one left to another. I left that bar someplace, you know, the guys got off at 3:30 and I think I left about 6 to head home. Earlier that day, I backed my company truck into a pole. Damaged it quite a bit because, see, I still hung over from the day before. Now, my way of solving things is just go buy a new one. Yeah? What the hell? Yeah? Give the truck to somebody else, have the body shop fix it, and buy you a new truck. That's what I did. Then I headed home. Yeah. A few guys passed me in the street rods and they were all waving and said, hey, are you going to be at the car show? Oh, yeah, I'll be right there. Yeah. I get home and wife's sitting there. First thing I do is walk in and fix up a drink. And that drink consisted of 44 ounces of Yukon Jack and one ice cube. I like to water it down just a little. I got back in that, and she's out, and she goes, we're going down to the car show, aren't we? I said, sure, no problem. So I said, why don't you drive the Roadster? I'm going to take my race car down there. Yeah. She's going, you sure? Don't question me, woman. Yeah, you just drive the little Roadster, yeah, and put the kids in the rumble seat. Now, see, I'd already asked one of those girls to ride down there in that race car with me. Yeah. And that car, race car was a Corvette that was running on nitromethanol. Yeah. Tons of horsepower. But see, when I'm drinking, I always come up with these real good ideals. I don't know about you guys, you know. So I'd take it up down the hills and run it around, you know, Eucalyptus Hills a little bit. Yeah. I got down there to Lakeside Road. And, yeah, I opened it up, spun the tires. That's about all I remember, except this damn palm tree jumped out in front of me. Yeah, right in the middle of the road. You guys are in Lakeside. Watch these palm trees. Wrap that car right around that palm tree. You know? Shot me through the windshield, you know. I'm back in the windshield. It just happened to be a fireman leaving, you know, from the fire station up there on the top of the hill. He pulled over and he grabbed me and he says, you know, you stay in the car because, you know, you're pretty well messed up. You're bleeding all over. No, I'm going to take off. No. You just stay here. Because see, if Rod could got out, he'd have went home and had one of his sons, you know, come down there with a trailer, pick up that car, and nothing would have happened. The highway patrol showed up. The ambulance showed up. I was bleeding from a little bit of everywhere. It had cut off one ear and gashes through the head, the face, and everything else, you know. Sort of looked like Frankenstein, you know. So they said, we'll take you to Elkhorn Hospital. The highway patrolman walked up, and he said, if you wasn't bleeding so damn much, I'd be taking you to jail. And I'm going, damn, that's a pretty rough thing to say to me. You know? Don't you know who I am? You know? I play cards with all the cops, you know, and I talk to the mayor and all this other racing association. Who do you think you are? You know? So I got down to Elkhorn Hospital. There was an orderly that pulled me in there and put me on the gurney. They rolled me in there and they said, we got to start stitching you up. And there's glass all through everything. And the doctor looked at me and he says, how much do you have to drink? And I said, oh, probably a couple. Yeah. That's the famous words that every one of us alcoholics use. I don't know about you. Just a couple. Yeah. And they started scrubbing that glass out. And this orderly, yeah, I come to find out later that his mom was killed by a drunk driver. And man, it was, Tom, I said, can't you give me some morphine or something for these cuts and stuff as you're scraping that stuff out? He says, you don't need it. And he kept scrubbing, you know. And the harder he scrubbed, you know, the more I bled, you know, and everything else, you know. Finally, after about 2 or 3 hours, you know, they said, you know, he's good enough to go home. They sewed me up and everything else and kicked me out of the Elkhorn Hospital. Of course, that wife was in front of me, you know, when this car wrapped around the palm tree. And those two little girls were too. And they watched me, you know, and it scared them to death. You know. Car club showed up, you know. The first thing out of their mouth, throttle stuck. And I said, no, it really didn't, you know. There's 3 throttle return springs on that thing. It didn't stick, you know. And I said, no, I think I had too much to drink. And this buddy of mine said, no, you didn't. Throttle stuck. See, and that was the first time that I admitted that maybe that I had a problem, you know, just maybe, you know. So, you know, shortly after that, I got a notice from DMV. They sent me home from the hospital, you know, and I noticed the DMV to appear, you know. I had a whole lot of trucks that I had, you know, company trucks and everything else that, you know, were registered to me and my partner, and insurance come back and they said, you can't drive any of these trucks. Yeah, DMV wants your license. And about that time, you know, I had to go back to the doctor because got to get the stitches out. Yeah, so I go into this doctor and they changed my doctor. I'd had him for years. And he gave me medicine for my stomach ulcers and I drank on top of that. Yeah, he gave me medicine for my nerves and I drank on that. And I had a new doctor. And it was a female. And she walked in. She looked at me and she says, how much do you have to drink? A couple. She says, really? And I said, yeah, just a couple of drinks. Maybe a couple of beers. Yeah. She looked at me. Walked over before she took any stitches out. Yeah. Grabbed her prescription pad and wrote down 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm going, who the hell is she? Yeah. What is this stuff? You know, what did my wife say? Yeah. She wrote that and put that down there. She started taking those stitches out. And she says, by the way, I know these meetings that you're going to be going to. Yeah. She said, I want it signed. 90 meetings in 90 days, and you bring me the slip. Now, this is before I had to have a court slip. Yeah. Okay. So I take it, and I start to leave. And she looked over at my wife, and she looked over at me, and she says, hey. She said, here's another prescription. I went, oh, shit, what's this one going for? She says, you need to see a marriage counselor. Ripped it off and handed it to me. What's this stuff, a marriage counselor? Yeah, I know everything's going great in my life. Yeah. They're parting a book about that, too, you know. Well, the guy looks up out of the cellar and says, oh, Mom, everything's going fine. You know, I was a tornado ripping through their lives. And I went to that marriage counselor, and she came in, and marriage counselor talked a little bit to me and talked a little bit to her. Then he looked over at her, and he says, can I get you to leave the room? She got up and walked out, and I'm going, what's going on? He grabbed his prescription pad. What? He's going to give me some medicine. 90 meetings in 90 days. And bring a court slip. I said, that's what my other doctor did. And he says, these are different meetings. I went, what? Yeah. And I grabbed the court slip. And he said, oh, wait a minute. I got one more prescription. I said, what's this for? And he said, I want you to see the psychiatrist. He's over in La Jolla. What do I need a psychiatrist for? Yeah. I don't drink that often. Maybe every 2 hours, but you know, not too often for me. You know? So they wrote out that prescription pad, and I had to see that other doctor, a psychiatrist. We both went up there, because see, I didn't have a driver's license at that time. They picked it up, and we went upstairs to the real nice office overlooking La Jolla Shores, you know. And I walk in there, and she walks in there, and we both sat down. He said, I'll be with you in a second. He looks up. He looks up at her and he says, could you wait out in the waiting room? Oh, no, I know what this crap's all about, you know. He grabs a prescription pad and writes out 90 meetings in 90 days. I wasn't about to tell him that, you know, I got two other doctors that told me to do this, you know. Because, see, I'm a cheater, you know. I'm a manipulator. He says, by the way, Saturday night, he says, I want you at my office. I said, what time? He said, about 4 o'clock. Okay. I said, why? He said, we're going to a meeting. I said, what meeting are we going to go to at 4 o'clock? Yeah. He said, you just be here. And it was a La Jolla speakers meeting. It didn't start until a long time after that. Yeah. And that man sat there and talked to me about his drinking, yeah, and sharing with me. He said, I can't sponsor you. He says, but I'd love to. He says, you need to find a sponsor. In the meanwhile, I was going to some meetings, you know, and I walked into this smoke-filled room over in El Cajon, you know, and, you know, everybody was laughing and giggling, and, man, you couldn't even see the people, you know, in this place. And I walked over there, and I put my court slip up to the front, you know, and I sat down there, and a bunch of old guys came up to me, and, you know, and they were laughing and joking and kicking around, and they asked me, and they said, welcome. Okay, welcome. Yeah, not a problem. Have a seat. Yeah. They called on me, you know, in the middle of that. And I started sharing. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, my name's Rod, and I don't know if I'm an alcoholic or not, you know. Courts sent me here, and, yeah. In my mind, I was a victim. Yeah. Which these old-timers, you know, they were real polite with me. They said, there is no victims in Alcoholics Anonymous, only volunteers. And they take hostages. So I get ready to leave, you know. Meeting's over and I'm going to leave, you know. And Hugh McCoy come up to me. I don't know, a lot of you guys know Hugh. You know? And Hugh came up and he goes, no, you ain't going anywhere. What are you talking about? He said, go pick up the ashtrays. I don't smoke. He said, I didn't ask you if you smoked. Bam, you know. Sounds pretty hard. He said, pick up the coffee cups. Because, see, we had coffee cups back then, you know, with your names on them. Put them on the hook. He says, you're going to wash the ashtrays and wash the coffee cups. Yeah. Two or three other old men came up to me. You know? One of them was Chuck Courtney. Yeah. He says, stick around, boy. He says, what are you doing at about 10 o'clock? I'm probably going to be sleeping. He says, no, you're not. Well, what are you talking about? He says, we got a meeting over here in El Cajon, you know, at Winchell's. You know? At 11 o'clock. He said, meet me there, I'll buy you a donut. I said, really, I can buy my own damn donuts, you know. He says, no, show up. And see, I didn't know if these were requirements to get my court slip signed or not, so I showed up. I'm going, son of a gun. Yeah. And I'm sitting in a meeting, you know, and I start to share because I had a brilliant idea came up, you know. They said, we don't want what you have. If you want what we have, you go to any lengths to get it. I'm going, damn, it's probably in that damn book. Yeah. And they said, find a sponsor. And they were talking about 90 meetings in 90 days. And I'm going, damn, You know, that's what I got on these other things. You know, I don't want to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Got to be some way out of this. You know? You got to have a sponsor to interpret, you know, the words in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys were talking in a foreign tongue to me because you talked about serenity. You know, and you talked about peace. You talked about love. And I didn't know anything about love. You know? Didn't know anything about peace. Because, see, there's always turmoil in my life. Because, see, I'm a fixer. I'll go fix the problem. You know? I'll go do this. And I couldn't fix the problem anymore. And, you know, you talked about crying. In my second week, at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, they called on me and nothing could come out but tears. By that time, I got a sponsor. This guy was one of my best friends. He was in the same car club with me, you know, and I played poker with him all the time. I noticed that he didn't drink, but he always had booze there for us, you know. So, yeah, who am I to ask questions? You know? So, yeah, I called him up and I said, Brian, will you be my sponsor? He goes, yeah, I got a couple of requirements first. He said, are you willing to go to any links? And, you know, there was a quiet for a while. I'm going, just a second, what are you asking me to go to any links for? I said, yeah. He says, good. He says, the second requirement is tell me what's on the first page of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, and call me back. Then I'll give you my answer. And, you know, he hung up on me. Damn, man, I've known this guy for a long time. What did he hang up on me for? So I look in there. I call him back a little bit. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous. Click. He hung up on me again. I went, damn, that's what it says, Alcoholics Anonymous. I call him back again. And this happened 3 or 4 times, you know, with him hanging up on me. And I'm getting real pissed. I'm going, yeah. Does he know who I am? And I went, oh, yeah, he does. And I call him back and I said, the first page is blank. He goes, now you have something to work with. He says, you got to be blank. You got to forget everything that you used to know. Yeah. You got to be willing to change all your old playmates and start changing those things. And he began my sponsor. Yeah. And he began working with me on a daily basis. And you know, I was over at his house. He said, bring the big book. I came over there for the first time and brought the big book. Of course, you know, on that first night I was at AA meeting, I bought every damn book that was on the shelf. Because, you know, I figured, yeah, I'll show you guys. Yeah. I get over to Brian's house. He got the big book. He's talking. I figured he was going to read it. He says, no, I'll start reading it. I said, Brian, I got to tell you something. And I said, this has got to stay between me and you. He says, what is it? I said, I can't read. He says, you run that business. How come? I said, Brian, I can't read. I manipulate people. I have a tape recorder. I hand it to somebody and they transcribe it for me. He put that down. He said, oh, we'll fix that. That's not a big deal, right? He says, go up to AA Central. He says, the big book's on tape. Buy it. He says, you got the money. He says, by the way, hire a driver. He says, you got the money. I hired a driver, you know, to drive me around. He says, wherever you go, you play these tapes. He says, by the way, buy the 12x12 on tapes. And he says, I want you in a step study. And, you know, there was a Porter Hall step study that I got into. He says, you take a highlighter, and he says, any of those words you don't recognize or whatever, he says, you highlight. We'll look them up in the dictionary. And I'm going, oh, man, this sounds like this is going to go on for a lifetime. Shit. Yeah. Can I find somebody to do it for me? Because I'm always looking for the easier, softer way. And I couldn't find it. And we go through the big book. He taught me how to read. He taught me to look up those words. He had a dictionary that was in 1927 or 28. I have that dictionary now. Yeah. And, you know, we looked up those words, and he spent the time and the hours and stuff like that with me, showing me and teaching me, yeah, and showing me what's going on there. He says, you need to know what's in this big book because it's going to save your life. And one of the other requirements he had, he says, you know, when you come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, Rod, you get your coffee first friggin' thing. He says, you go down there and you find a chair and you look at everyone that shares. Yeah. He says, you don't get up in the middle of a meeting to go out and have another cup of coffee or a cigarette or smoke. I said, well, I don't smoke. He says, or the bathroom. Yeah? He says, because somebody may say something will save your life. Oh, damn. And I've done that. And I continue to do that. Because it works for me. Yeah? It really does. Yeah? You know, he sat there and he had the time to go through that. And we went through this in the first year. Went through all 12 steps. You know, I had to start SP 38. And, boy, that's a heck of a story. Yeah. And I, you know, I went up there February the 1st. That's when it started. And a guy named John Buzzard was up there. You know, and you know, there was 50 of us that started that, was in that first class. And they assigned counselors to everybody. And as John was talking and the words, you know, it was just ringing out. But see, I held back the emotions. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to feel it. I didn't want to hear it. Because see, I can do it myself. Yeah. You don't know who I am. Yeah. The problem was they did. They gave me a counselor. I was the last guy picked. And he walked out. This man saved my life. Yeah. He was totally different than me. Totally different. He sort of walked out with a swish and he had an earring in there and I went, no way, I'm a cowboy from Lakeside. Ain't no way I'm going to listen to this guy. And he says, my name's Jack. He says, if you don't want to listen to me, he says, I'll make a call. How long do you want to spend in jail? Whoa, wait a minute, maybe I need to talk to him. Yeah? And I went there. He was dying of AIDS. Now see, I had every prejudice that you know to man. Yeah, I was raised with those. And he stripped them away. I cried to that man. Yeah? I talked to him and I prayed with him. I worked my first 12 steps, all one of them, with that man before he passed away. He says, you'll do that. And I did. Yeah. When he passed away, you know, I went to his funeral. Yeah. And yeah, that guy saved my life. I don't agree with, you know, his philosophy. And I don't have to. He says, you keep your opinions to yourself. He says, this is a life and death situation to you. And I believe it. You know, it's life and death. I've seen too much of it in my lifetime. You know? I worked all steps with Jack. I worked them with Brian. On my second birthday, you know, it was coming up to that, and Brian was over at my house, you know, and we were talking, and I told him, I said, I'm in a step study here, man, and it's great, and it's starting all over again. And it's at Porter Hall, and it's the second time I'm going through it. And I said, you need to get in it. And Brian had a resentment. Brian was a dope fiend, you know, an alcoholic, living on the streets before he got sober. He got sober, and he sailed in the America's Cup. He was a master sailor, yeah. He was the guy that took me to the Point Loma meetings, you know, and get me tied, you know, with the old-timers there, yeah. But that second year, he wasn't there. He wasn't working the steps. He stopped going to meetings, yeah. January the 8th, we found him. And, you know, he was out in courtside. And he had to have one more drink. And you know, his ego wouldn't let him come back. He blew his brains out. He put a bucket over the top of his head and a shower curtain. Yeah, and pulled the trigger of a 9mm. And I thought it was over for me. You know, because see, this man had took me through the steps. What the hell happened? You know? How am I going to find another sponsor? Who's going to keep me sober? Yeah? What's going on? Because see, you guys talked about a God, and I was raised in a Southern Baptist family. Yeah? My grandfather was a Pentecostal preacher. The rest of them were Catholics. And yeah, I knew it. All of that was screwed up. But see, in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you give me a God, a loving God, that understands me, that I don't have to understand. Yeah, He understands me. And He's the one that kept me sober. I got a sponsor, yeah. Right after that, I got two sponsors, yeah. Because I went, yeah, I don't tell them what's going to happen to the other ones, yeah. I'm not running real good luck right now. And those sponsors, you know, got to open everything. One of those sponsors was, he was a lawyer. So I put him under retainer. I gave him a dollar, and I said, this is for you, okay? I said, this is a retainer. Because see, my four-step pretty big. There's a few men that know, yeah. I broke all 10 commandments. And I'm not proud of that. It's what happened. And I had to share that with another human being. I had to write that. We burn them up in the mountains. But that other sponsor, you know, that lawyer, he said, you hang on to that because that's going to be your 8th step. He said, you hang on to it and you continue to write on it. Yeah. And we did. Yeah. He said, that 9th step. And, you know, Joe and Charlie talks about, you know, the right now amends and, you know, sooner or later, the nevers. And, you know, I've made the nevers. Yeah. Yeah. And I get to have the freedom. 3 years into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I stood up in front of one of my home groups and told them, I said, my name's Rod Bailey, I'm a grateful alcoholic, and before I take this cake and tokens, I need to tell you something that I can't read. I learned to read Alcoholics Anonymous just to strip that eldered ego that I have that keeps pushing me out there. And, you know, they all shook their head and they said, we know, Rod. I'm going down. I said, I said it right because, see, I have a hell of a memory. You know, I memorize things. But you know, when I get up in front of everybody, you know, I would say it so damn fast, it would sound, it was on. You know, sponsor slowed me down. Sentence by sentence in the big book took me through those so that I would know what the meaning is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 5 years into my program, you know, I had a stepson. He was out at Camp Barrett for statutory rape. Yeah. He just had his 16th birthday. He got a hold of some inhalants at Camp Barrett. Had to use them. And it killed him. That's what happens to us. I thought the world had ended. I watched Mom go crazy. I watched the men of Alcoholics Anonymous get around me and carry me to meetings. I didn't want to hear anything about God. I didn't want to hear all this happy stuff. I didn't want to hear the jokes because, see, I had justifiable resentment against God. There was a guy that used to speak down here. He passed away a long time, Dr. Paul. Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Paul always gave out his phone number at the end of his speaking, you know. And I called him. I said, what's this stuff, you know? Exception. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. I said, this happened. He said, no, it didn't, right. And he took the time to explain to me. He says, I want you to call me every day. He says, there's two worlds. He says, there's God's world and there's man's world. He said, he was in man's world. He does what an alcoholic drug addict does. Has to use one more time. It killed him. He says, now he's your angel. He shows you what not to do. This is what the old timers told me. Yeah? What not to do. Yeah? How do I apply that in my life? They showed me how to do that in the steps. They continued to do that. We got a divorce because she went crazy and she had to use. I can't be around drugs or alcohol. You know, that's just not me. Yeah. And today, you know, I have a wonderful life. I want to tell you, you know, the miracles in my life. Yeah. I was sober when my first grandson was born and my granddaughters. And have you ever seen their grandfather drunk? I got to walk around with them in the hospital, chasing them up and down in the delivery room. When they delivered those little babies, I got to hold them. See, I can't say that about my kids because, see, I was drunk every single time. You know, I was drunk. You know, it was a party for Rod. You know, it's always been a party for Rod. You know, it took a God to get that out of me. It was a little lady that... on my Friday night meeting, she knew I had a real problem with God. Yeah. And her name was Elizabeth. And Elizabeth pulled me off to the side and she says, you know, Rod, you really have a problem with God. And I said, I sure do. She says, it's not with God. It's with religion. She says, you have to remember, religion's man-made. God is spirituality. And that did it for me. And she says, you don't have to figure out who God is. He knows who Rod is. He says, all you got to do is do the best you can on a daily basis. Yeah? And that's what my steps do for me. Yeah? There's a 3rd step prayer I say every day. Yeah? I have to offer myself to Thee. To build with me and to do with me. Yeah? That's just all there is to it. To do His will. Not Rod's will. Yeah? Every one of those grandkids, I got to be there for their birth. Yeah? I got to be the grandfather. A sober grandfather. My kids trust me with their most precious possessions, my grandkids. Allows them to ride with me. Now, you got to remember, some of those kids were my designated drivers when I was too drunk. You know? And, you know, I have a wonderful life if I do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah? The old-timers got me really involved with H&I. I've been in H&I from the day that I came in. And I told them, I said, why do I have to be in H&I? And they said, you need to see where you may go. We were down there at Detox, 1111 Island Street, for a long time, you know, until they closed it. Now I'm at Halcyon. I do work for them. You know? I get to keep this program by giving it away. You know? Doesn't work any better than that. You know? Those ex-wives are friends now. You know? They weren't bad people. It was me. You know? Melton Geigerson really pointed it out to me. You know, he says, Rod, he says, you got to stop making those chicken shit remarks and doing those chicken shit things. And he says, maybe you'll be able to form a relationship. I have relationships. You know? I have friends all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, all I have to do is walk into a meeting. Yeah, my name's Rod. I'm from out of town. I'm from San Diego. I do that a lot. I have home groups in Hawaii. I have a home group in Bakersfield when I go up to see my dad. You know, let me tell you another miracle. Yeah. 1 year yesterday, my son got out. He did 14 years straight in jails and prisons and behind bars. He had 10 years sober before he walked out, you know, into South Point. I hated that kid. We love each other today. Yeah? He touches my heart. Yeah? He's sober. I'm sober. He gets to call me on my own crap sometime. He goes, wait a minute, you know, God didn't bring you this far to fall. I got another friend that tells me a story about that too. Yeah? And he's right. God didn't bring me this far. He didn't bring you this far. Yeah? As long as I stay sober and I put the hand of AA out there, I am responsible for that. Yeah? I'm responsible to be the best big book that anybody sees, you know, that I can be that day. In order to do that, I have to stay in the big book. I got to stay in the 12x12. Yeah? They got another little book just put out for me, as Bill sees it, Dial a Problem. Yeah, it works out real well. Yeah? Yeah? I have a wonderful life today. You guys can have it too. I got a son in Washington. Yeah? He's got 2 or 3 more years than I do. Yeah? When I got sober, I called him up and I said, Ronnie, I'm an alcoholic. He says, no shit, Dad. Whoa, what's going on here? You know, where's the respect and the love? You know? He goes, I got 3 years sober. And I'd been working on this street rod to take it to a national car run. You know, and that's all I wanted to do, is take it to this, up to this car show, because I knew it was going to win first prize. You know? And I'm sober. You know? And I'm in my first year of sobriety, and I take this car up there, push it off the trailer and everything else. My son's there, and I fire it up. And it's running great. And I told him, I said, why don't we find a morning meeting? He goes, okay. Every meeting we went to in Bakersfield was just closing. We'd get there for the closing prayer. And my son says, he says, tonight, he says, Dad, I'll have 3 years. And there was a meeting over in Oildale. Started at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock, you know, in these national street rods, we all get together and we parade around. And there's people out there, you know, giving you a 10 or a 9 or an 8. And get to play with our cars. And that was the most important things for me, you know. Me and that son went to that Oildale meeting. I gave him a 3-year cake. Tears came down. And they came down and they came down. After that meeting, you know, we sat out there in front of that in the parking lot, not going back to that national car event, and talking to my son and making amends. This is what you guys have taught me how to do, to have a relationship with him. He came down this summer and we got to go for rides up and down the coast and around on our Harleys, you know. I get to enjoy my kids today. I get to enjoy my grandkids today. I get to enjoy you. Yeah? If nobody told you they love you, I love you. Yeah? I have a wonderful life. I've walked through some crap. But see, all I have to do is put the hand out. If you put the hand out there, somebody's going to grab it. There's going to be some old-timer or something say, hey, wait a minute, it ain't that bad. We're going to show you how to get through this. Yeah? I've got tons of friends worldwide. I get to go to Hawaii. Yeah? There's a Maui convention. You know, friends call me for that Maui convention. They said, we want to start a Maui convention over there. Rod, can you be there? Sure, I'll bring Terry and the rest of us. We'll come on over. We'll come over on Tuesday night. That's a men's meeting. We're going to have a barbecue. And yeah, I've been showing up that every since, not this year, but for a long time at Maui. I got friends there that know my name, that know who I am, that can call me on my crap. Yeah? There's another thing I need to share with you too. Yeah? When I first got into Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah, the old timers and those men, you know, grabbed me and they said, hey Rod, he says, you're toxic. He says, you know, you need to go to men's meetings. No mixed meetings for you. And I did. And they said, you got to have 1 year of men's meetings before we can put you out in the general population. I'm going, damn. And I followed their advice. Begrudgingly, but I followed their advice. Because they told me, you know, if you're willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, you'll do what we do. If you're not, don't call me. Yeah, they did it with love. Not one of those guys ever said a harsh word to me other than do this. This is what I've done. That's how you follow me. They did it with love and tolerance. That's our code, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I try to live by that. Yeah, some days I do it real good. Some days I don't do it real good. But I'm a work in progress. And this is what my sponsors have told me. You're a work in progress. You got to keep practicing. Practice, practice, practice. Yeah? I go to retreats. You know, there's 4 or 5 retreats that we get to go to a year. And we just have a blast. And the men's retreat, yeah? That's what they told me. I said, why do I want to go to a men's retreat? Yeah? Just go there. I think I'm out of time. And I get to have fun. Yeah? If you're new here, stick around. Yeah, I'm going to tell you what they told me. Yeah, you don't stick around, we'll gladly refund your misery. Yeah, and I've watched a lot of people come in and out. This is a life and death program for me. Thank you for my sobriety.